It's officially 2026, and my New Year's resolution is to prioritize high-quality pieces in my wardrobe. Thanks to Quince, I can already check that off my list. I'm already planning outfits around my new cotton Oxford shirt. It's such a classic, timeless piece that I know I'll be rewearing all year. Need more than just a wardrobe update? Quince has tons of options for the home as well. Maya has had the same dinnerware since college and has finally decided it's time for a refresh, starting with a gorgeous set of ceramic cake plates. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/rehash for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/rehash to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rehash.
Hey, it's Maya. Just wanted to announce that we've launched a Patreon for this podcast. It's got two tiers, both of which are pretty low cost and feature monthly bonus episodes, plus early access to all other episodes. The higher tier also has access to mini pods where we talk about other internet stuff in a bit more of a casual format, plus access to Q&As if you really want to get intimate with it. If you like Rehash and want some more from us, then support us on Patreon. It'll help us a lot. Thanks. Hey! I'm Maya. I am a YouTuber and occasional bitch.
And I'm Hannah, and I'm a scammer. And this is Rehash, a podcast about the social media phenomenons that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is on public theater, which is all about our collective fascination with a good public villain. In the world of influencers, the crafting of an online persona is not unlike performance art, and nobody exemplifies, or at least claims to, better than today's subject. It's hard to attribute a title to Caroline Calloway. According to her, she's an artist, art historian, and most importantly, a memoirist. According to the press, she's an internet celebrity, a scammer, a one-woman fire fest. I like to think the real Caroline Calloway exists somewhere between these two definitions. Self-aware yet self-contradictory, creative yet destructive, insufferable yet insufferably easy to empathize with, Caroline exhibits all of these traits. She's a self-prophesized enigma, and today we're going to try and figure her out.
Woo!
And so, Maya, can you give our listeners a elevator pitch on who Caroline Calloway is?
Okay, let's see.
It's a big, yeah.
That's a lot to define. Caroline Calloway, as I understand her, is an online influencer and self-proclaimed scammer. She has kind of had a bit of a crazy role in the public eye, mostly just for niche people or niche audiences who are interested in whatever kooky antics she's up to today. But she blew up in the mainstream public, for one, after a massive article of her was released, I think back in 2019, about the fact that she isn't really who she says she is. And then she kind of blew up again in the mainstream, to the mainstream public, after this disastrous interview she did on Z-Way's show. Z-Way is a comedian and talk show host, if you guys don't know, who had this show on YouTube and Instagram, where she baits her non-black, most often white guests into exposing their own deep-seated racism. And Caroline's episode was just a hot mess. You guys should definitely watch it. Yeah, that's kind of the best way I can define her without giving away too much.
No, and you did a great job. But let me bring it way back in time. So Caroline got her start posting on Instagram around its genesis back in 2012. Always obsessed with becoming a memoirist, before having lived enough of her own life to fill a book, Caroline took to her Instagram captions as a sort of public diary, chronicling her life as an undergraduate student at Cambridge. She was an early adopter of Instagram as an outlet for self-promotion and gained traction online while studying at Cambridge, because she was documenting her fairy tale life of fancy balls and dinners at members-only clubs and weekends in the English countryside. Through the popularity of her Instagram, Caroline secured the book deal she'd always coveted. For $500,000, it was going to be a collection of funny essays and accompanying photographs that I'm sure could have fared well with the Rupee Core crowd. But then in 2017, Caroline announced that she had pulled out of that very deal. In explaining her decision, she claimed it was the sexist expectations of her publishers who soured her experience by forcing her to focus her book on her romantic escapades. Something that had been a draw of her original Instagram content. So to help us fill in the blanks between Caroline's original rise and fall, I have to introduce a new character. Maya, how do you feel about Natalie Beach?
Okay, well, I don't know Natalie, so I can't really testify to her actual character.
Right, of course.
But I'm pretty put off by her personally, as a person.
Yeah. For the uninformed, Caroline and Natalie met in a writing workshop at NYU, quickly developing an unhealthy friendship. In her article, Natalie describes the ways that she looked up to and envied Caroline and all the things she was willing to put up with to stay in her orbit. This would eventually include co-writing the Instagram captions Caroline would become famous for. That is, until the two fell out of touch while Caroline studied abroad at Cambridge, which is when her account blew up. It wouldn't be until Natalie heard about Caroline's book deal that she would re-enter her friend's life. The friendship Natalie depicts in this story is familiar to many of us. From the beginning, she feels an imbalance of power between her and Caroline, some of which is a projection of her own insecurities, and some of which is likely the result of being friends with, well, a narcissist. But it's clear that her long-standing jealousy and resentments allow her to dehumanize Caroline, who, as we will later learn, has her own demons. Caroline would enlist Natalie to help her finish her book proposal, and this soon becomes the center of Natalie's world. Having recently graduated from NYU and without any clear prospects for becoming a writer, Natalie sees this as the career opportunity she needs and begins to see Caroline as a stepping stone. But the version of Caroline that Natalie finds when they reunite is not well. When Natalie moves into Caroline's dorm room at Cambridge to work on the book, she finds her friend addicted to Adderall, isolated and unable to complete her studies, let alone a manuscript. She does reach out to Caroline's mother and helps her get into therapy, and the two continue to try and meet their deadline for the manuscript. But it's after a dramatic night in Amsterdam that Natalie hits her limits with Caroline.
This is such a classic, friend travel story.
Essentially, after being rejected by a man who was interested in Caroline, Natalie finds herself locked out of their rental and unable to get a hold of her friend until the next morning. It's basically an accumulation of all the issues that have been building up throughout their friendship, but she uses this moment in an article as the climax within the story of their professional relationship, of which it is actually irrelevant.
Yeah.
Following this incident, Natalie pacifies her rage towards Caroline for the sake of finishing the book, but once it was clear that she could not get Caroline to work on the book, she pulled out and watched as her friend missed the deadline before eventually pulling out of the book deal altogether. Flash forward to 2019, and Caroline is given and taken claim of the label scammer. She was already in hot water for a series of creativity workshops that she had announced and sold tickets to.
Flower crown workshops. Everyone got to make flower crowns.
I don't even know if they did. So I can't go too much into detail for the sake of time. But yeah, essentially for $165, people were expecting to have an afternoon with Caroline eating home-cooked salads and like bonding and learning the secrets of her creativity. This was supposed to be a cross-country tour, but most of the days got canceled or moved to Caroline's apartment in New York, even if you were across the country. This had already started to cast a negative light on Caroline. And then shortly after, Natalie publishes a piece for The Cut, which chronicled her and Caroline's personal and professional relationship titled I Was Caroline Calloway. The piece would be the most popular of that year on the publication's website, and it propelled Caroline Calloway into infamy. And it's safe to say that neither of us are fans of Caroline Calloway. But this article, which was meant to cement her villain status, actually had the opposite effect for us.
Yeah, Natalie's article, I remember reading it back in 2019, really, really rubbed me the wrong way. For one, I just find it so, so painfully unself-aware. Just in the way she writes, I think she leans a bit too much into the old she wears short skirts, I wear t-shirts cliche. Like, this is literally verbatim a line that she wrote. She turned in personal essays. Okay, she meaning Caroline. She turned in personal essays about heartbreak and boarding school, had silk eyelashes, and wore cashmere sweaters without a bra. She seemed like an adult, someone who had just gone ahead and constructed a life of independence. I, meanwhile, was a virgin with a meek ponytail, living in a railroad apartment that was sinking into the Gowanus Canal. She just does she falls into this awful habit of comparison in her writing where she'll inflate Caroline's magic charm, I guess, and like innate charisma, and she'll like really downplay her own kind of privileges. I'm not saying that she's a privileged person, but just she really makes herself sound like she's this abjectly, just in the tone of the writing, that she's like this abjectly like suffering person. But when you actually read the text, you're like, no, you're fine. You were living in a railroad apartment in New York. You know, they're small, but you're good.
So we've all been friends with someone that we felt was like prettier or more special or cooler than us. Like, we've all had jealous friendships, but usually you know when it's time to cut the cord.
Yeah, you know when it's time to cut the cord. And that kind of goes into the other thing. So for one, I had the problem of her kind of thematizing her life, but doing it kind of non-consensually with someone, another subject, which is Caroline. I had a lot of issues with the way she discusses in great intimate detail Caroline's mental health and substance abuse struggles, and just kind of felt like that was hers to present to the world and present it in a very unsympathetic way.
Well, yeah, it's so weird detailing it so it's clear that this girl was not doing well during the times that you are the most angry with her, and yet you fail to actually put two and two together. And
We'll link the article. Like, I think you guys should read it because it's just an interesting piece to read. An interesting work of writing.
Creative nonfiction.
Yeah, a lot of what this article tries to play off, like what you were saying, we're cutting the cord, is that Natalie tries to play it off like she has a lot less agency than she actually does. A lot of the situations she chooses to ingratiate herself in with Caroline, like she actively, her and Caroline will kind of break off and then she'll actively pursue her, and it kind of comes across like she views Caroline as a meal ticket, but she doesn't seem to think that. Like, she doesn't seem to realize that.
Which is crazy because, again, even the way she tells the story, she's like, I heard Caroline had a book deal and now we're hanging out again.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it actually does come across a bit predatory, like in terms, like financially predatory, and it's just funny how much she paints herself as a victim in this narrative when
a martyr almost
when she really like pursues this relationship to an unnatural degree. Like, you really don't need to be doing this. I also just like this quote because I thought it was annoying. She says, if I were more like Caroline, I thought, more beautiful and fun, if I radiated girlishness, then men would view me as someone worthy of care. I would have my own midnight adventures with Italian gentlemen, my life so enviable that my only job would be living to its fullest. Again, with the comparison, like really, really lowering yourself in the tone, and then really inflating Caroline. And it's really through her kind of like deluded perspective of Caroline. And then in the same degree, having this really unsympathetic, idealized image of Caroline, while in the very same breath, showing all the very obvious flaws that Caroline has without really interrogating them.
It's giving like 500 Days of Summer, except between friends.
Like, yeah, it's the 500 Days of Summer of like female friendship, basically.
Like, really, for me, automatically cast Caroline Calloway in this very empathetic light, even though, as we will discuss, she's not actually this wholly empathetic character.
No, she isn't, but she's a person.
She's a person, and
yeah, exactly. This article paints her as a villain. She paints herself as like a messy hero, and she's just a human. But I think my main issue with the article that I just really think is so fascinating is it, this question kept coming up for me when I reread it, which is Natalie has written at this point about Caroline for so long without much credit. But is she entitled to Caroline as a subject after their friendship has ended? Mm-hmm. Is she entitled to use Caroline as the great subject of her writing when they're not even in each other's lives? That's such a weird ethical question with writing.
Honestly, I listened to some podcast interviews with Caroline Calloway when researching this, and she went on one to talk about Lena Dunham's memoir, Not That Kind of Girl, and like Caroline herself purports to be a memoirist and has a deep love and respect for the genre that I don't necessarily think that, at least from her perspective, that the ethical questions are wrapped up in like whether or not she is up for grabs as a subject. Personally, I think that Natalie had the right to write about her from a professional level as a friend.
But I do really see it as Natalie being opportunistic and using Caroline because this did blow Natalie up and Natalie was able to get jobs from this article.
It is opportunistic for sure. I think there's a lot of opportunism within the field of writing,
which we will get to with Bad Art Friend.
Yeah, so I don't think that it's an issue unique to Natalie. I think it's really shitty of her to do on a personal level with Caroline, but I also just think, based off of the takes that I've heard her give out about writing, that Caroline wouldn't actually take issue specifically with this.
Interesting.
It's just more the way that she went about it.
Yeah.
My issues was also that, like, Natalie conflates the unhealthy dynamic of their friendship with Caroline's misdoings on a professional level. There's a case to be made that she's neither a skilled businesswoman or a reliable friend, but it's important not to use one as proof in an argument about the other. Mm-hmm. She also fails to adequately examine her own actions at a time when she was treating her mentally unstable friend as a ticket to success. And then the supposed need to air out their dirty laundry in such a public way years later is another transparent instance of her using Caroline. It's worth noting that the story was also published shortly after Caroline lost her father to suicide. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it just seems like she is unable to give her even a smidgen of empathy or grace as a human being.
No, I don't think that this article was written with any empathy at all. She really whittles Caroline down into this two-dimensional villain. Mm-hmm. And you know what? This is actually really reminds me of in John Ronson's book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed, he has this whole section about this journalist named Jonah Lehrer, who basically a smaller journalist named Michael Moynihan discovers that Jonah Lehrer has been plagiarizing certain quotes, like certain Bob Dylan quotes, in one of his really famous, I think it was a book, I don't really remember. But anyways, there's this whole exchange between them where Michael is telling Jonah he knows about this information, and he's like, I have to do something with this. And Jonah's like, please, please, please don't. And Michael's like, I have to. But it turns out that Michael is a bit traumatized by this. Like, he really is scared about posting this because he knows what it's going to do to Jonah Lehrer's career. And it did absolutely, absolutely destroy Jonah Lehrer's career, this information. And it just really reminds me of this thing where Ronson talks about Michael, when he's interviewed by Ronson, kind of making Jonah Lehrer into this very, very two-dimensional villain in a way to kind of cope with the concept, that fact that he's doing this to him. And it kind of reminds me of the way Natalie kind of does it to Caroline in this article. Like, she really turns her into this completely caricaturist person. She is caricaturist, for sure, in real life. But this is not really how I
knew her. She's not a caricature, though. She's a very complicated character.
She's a very complicated character, yeah.
Well, that's what I meant by the 500 Days of Summer comparison, is that when she's speaking positively about Caroline, she infuses so much magic into her personality and builds her up to be this unhuman entity who's so charming, so glamorous, so whatever. And she's built her up in such a way that when Caroline does wrong, it's like someone with more power than like a mere mortal doing something wrong. And so the effects are just so much worse. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? She's not really willing to see her on like an equal human level because she's built her up in this way where she's beyond human status. And it does feel like a manic pixie dream girl thing where she kind of just exists to either make Natalie's life way better or way worse in her mind.
I completely agree.
So in the years following the article, Caroline has worn many hats. At first, she would fully embrace the scammer label and attempt to capitalize off of her infamy, even going so far as to give the book she would eventually be given a new deal for the title Scammer. But she has since backtracked on that and in interviews is constantly trying to give factually flimsy explanations for her past mistakes. Ironically, after doing pre-sales for it, she has failed to produce any drafts of the book. Caroline is notably absent from social media lately. She recently told Julia Fox and Nikki Takesh on their podcast Forbidden Fruits that she has moved to her grandmother's condo in Florida in an attempt to get away from her party girl lifestyle in New York. There, she plans on writing this new book, but says it will likely take 3 to 6 years to write. When asked if she had started writing within the 5 weeks she'd been in Florida, she said she had been busy unpacking.
Oh, no.
She also...
For 5 weeks?
She also spent a bunch of her money to go spend a few weeks living in a castle in, like, England or something, where she also didn't write.
Okay, jealous. I wonder what she was doing.
Great question.
Knitting.
She also had a brief stint selling skincare products, pretty cleverly called snake oil. But Caroline claims she decided to end her business despite being given lucrative offers to expand it, which I question that. There were also reported incidents of people finding cat hairs in their snake oil because Caroline was packaging the product from her apartment.
Of course she was. She does everything from her apartment.
And speaking of her apartment, she apparently owes her landlord at least $45,000 in back payments and $25,000 in damages because of course she does.
I have more of what she's been up to.
Okay.
She also sold a mass-produced knockoff of Matisse's Blue Nude 2
at
exorbitant prices under the new name Dreamer BB. She retweets or quote tweets literally any mention of her name on Twitter ever. Like, if I were make a tweet about Caroline Calloway just with her name in it, she would quote or retweet it.
Well, there's also a Twitter account that's like Caroline Calloway bought for defending her that I think she runs that has like 30 followers.
Yeah. She also pinned a full frontal nude to her Twitter page, which amazing.
At the very, very start of lockdown, she was tweeting about how she slept with this guy because he wanted her clout in Bergheim while wearing a Corona t-shirt.
Oh yeah, she did that. She also harasses journalists who speak critically of her at all and liken the backlash against her flower crown workshops to being diagnosed with cancer. She also took her cat to a bar. I just think she's constantly up to stuff. If you are a Caroline Calloway follower, you will never be bored.
Well, except that I checked Small Bean Snark, which is the Reddit page dedicated to talking about Caroline Calloway, and it's been pretty quiet lately. It used to be constantly full of stuff because she posts a bunch of shit, delete it all, post shit. This girl was always doing something. I think right now she's very dedicated to her quiet Floridian life.
Oh, that's beautiful. Good for her.
I mean, we'll see.
Good for her.
It's sort of tempting to play armchair psychologist with Caroline Calloway because there's just so much going on with her and she's full of contradictions. And it's hard sometimes to talk about her because on the one hand, this kind of thing is her self-admitted life force. She capitalizes off of scandal and likes to present this image of herself as someone who is cleverly playing the public into giving her their attention. She went on the podcast Celebrity Memoir Book Club to defend Lena Dunham's Not That Kind of Girl, as I mentioned earlier, and made many comparisons between Dunham, an influence of hers, and herself. Which, you know...
Why?
I can see her thinking that she's this, like, misunderstood genius, the way that Lena Dunham says a lot of shit where I'm like, stop it. But she has made some really great work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Caroline conflates herself with that despite the lack of work to represent that. When talking about Dunham and herself, she said... She wants to be talked about, and again, this is something that I feel like I'm an expert on. I really think you just need to take my word for it because I've been there, and I've been there with trying to just sort of play the internet and the culture like a church organ. And yes, I want to make good sentences and to make something that's digestible. I want to make something that's smart, but I also want to make something that like gets talked about, that like runs its own publicity for me. And yeah, I mean, a lot of the time it's clear that's what she's doing. But I think she thinks she's outsmarted us a lot more than she actually has.
Yeah, it's kind of this thing where social media opens the gateways into someone's private life, but then that person just like really embraces that nosiness that we have about them. She's constantly trying to be one step ahead.
like she's doing a self-aware parody of herself. I mean, even we just watched the film Not Okay last night, starring Zoe Deutsch as a influencer who gets caught up in her own scam. And Caroline Calloway makes several appearances throughout the film at the very end, leading a public shaming
survival workshop.
An online shaming, yeah, survival workshop. And it's this kind of stuff where she's giving such a strong wink where you're like, okay.
She thinks she is a lot bigger of a figure than she is, which is interesting. But if you know her, like, you know who she is.
Well, yeah.
It's, I guess, interesting. But if you didn't know her, you're like, I don't understand what this joke is because you're not that famous. Like, who are you?
Well, on Forbidden Fruit, they were like, Caroline, you're the girl that people love to hate. And she's like, yeah, but I also think I'm the girl that people love to love.
She's not wrong, honestly. She has some pretty dedicated fans who are like, yes, Caroline, every time she does anything.
She's also notorious for deleting negative comments. And
that's true.
Also, it was like bragged that only two people had reported her snake oil to the FDA. She was like, see, it's not a scam. On the other hand, I don't believe she's the villainous mastermind she proclaims to be, as we've just said, nor that it is in her best interest for her to be continuously perpetuating herself as the girl you love to hate, as we said, because for all of her self-branding as the scammer, Caroline seems to be trying equally as hard to prove to us or herself that she isn't what we think, that there's more to her, that she is this misunderstood genius.
I honestly think, like, all of this is just a survival tactic. Like, yeah. I really think it's a coping mechanism, kind of in the way the Try Guys lock down their personas in their, like, apology video. I think she's just kind of trying to protect herself. Before you can criticize her, she'll criticize herself. Before anyone is like, Caroline is so messy, Caroline is a scammer, Caroline's a fraud. Caroline has already said it on the internet, and there's tons of receipts to prove it. So no one can really attack her. No one can come at you with a knife because you've already, like, stab yourself.
I have heard her make arguments in defense of herself why she's not really this person. She's not really trying to embrace that label anymore. She is apparently trying to write her book, but also just seems like she can't figure out what she wants to write. And there's a great quote from this writer, Kaylee Donaldson, who wrote a piece chronicling Caroline's whole creative workshop fiasco, and she put it astutely but harshly. Caroline's main problem is that she doesn't want to be an artist or a storyteller or a writer. She wants to have made art, to have told stories, to have been a writer, to have taught, and so on. But that requires work, research, planning, sacrifice, and an acute understanding that not everything you do will be successful or worthy of celebration. She has nothing to offer but is selling everything. And that's harsh. But yeah. I think that the thing that makes me feel so empathetic towards Caroline is what Donaldson is describing. She represents a worst case scenario of myself, or at least how I often see myself. Someone who is so invested in their fantasies and impulses that they are unable to commit to anything long enough to make something real. And the big difference between Caroline and I is that she has an endless well of misguided confidence that, unfortunately, gets other people on board with her romantic notions, which means she isn't only responsible for disappointing herself, but, like, financially invested outsiders.
Others. Yeah,
which,
totally.
Yeah, thank God I don't have the charisma to get people on board with my...
You're charismatic. You should sell some snake oil on this podcast next time and see if people buy it.
Oh, imagine just for if fun. We got sponsored by snake oil, by Caroline.
Snake oil. Oh, the Yeah, Caroline Calloway, sponsor us. Every episode we're going to ask for a new sponsor, and they're going to get more and more heinous as time goes on. Yeah, that is really interesting. That quote is, it's a little harsh. It's also kind of sad. Unfortunately, she's famous for being famous, and she's become famous kind of for all the wrong reasons. I never was really privy to her social media stardom, like her Instagram fame.
Me neither.
Maybe that's why I don't think of her as being that famous. Maybe if I had been following her for that entire time, I would be a bit more, I would understand her a bit better. But even then, her captions were being ghostwritten, so it's not like she was putting in work there.
Not fully, no. I mean, when she blew up in Cambridge, Natalie, I don't think, was ghostwriting her captions. Natalie was doing that as a way to pay Caroline off or something. When they were apart, like, Caroline did write a lot of her captions.
Oh, so that's a You're Wrong About. They should make a You're Wrong About episode about Caroline Calloway. I think, ultimately, like, yeah, she doesn't have a job. her job is just being, I don't know if she has a job currently.
No,
she doesn't.
She sold the movie rights to her life up to the age of 28, and I'm pretty sure she's living off of that right now.
Ooh, I
wonder. And her, in her grandmother's condo.
But at the end of the day, like, yeah, I guess she doesn't have a job, and her job is being a public figure. So I don't know what other option there is for her, is except to get crazier and crazier and crazier with her antics and more extreme. But it's like, yeah, she obviously doesn't want to do that, but she's kind of on this trajectory, this unstoppable trajectory that's pushing her into this. And I think a lot of socialites and public figures end up doing that. Like, you become a caricature of yourself because yeah. that's what pays your bills. Look at all the people from Jersey Shore. Like, all they do now is just walk around and be like, I'm Mike the Situation. And you're like, yeah. what do you do?
I know, but the thing is that she started with such big aspirations and has managed to get a second book deal in spite of proving the fact that she could not.
She was incapable of writing a book.
And I feel bad for her because when she talks about it, it seems like she really, really wants to, but doesn't want to. And yeah. I don't feel bad for her. I mean, she'll be fine. She's actively trying to make money off of as much attention as she can get.
I support it.
It's hard.
It is like watching a car crash, though, a little bit.
A car crash who's like, I'm such a car crash.
Yeah, it's definitely watching a car crash being like, I am such a car crash. But there is entertainment value in it. Like, no. For some reason, I'm like, and excited. We just, like, when she came up on screen yesterday during Not Okay, we both squealed. We were like, it's Karen!
And it's not like with, you know, as we spoke previously with Best Dress, it's not quite the same the way you were talking and, like, dissecting Caroline, because Caroline has put all that information out for us.
She doesn't necessarily really feel like a victim of the public. Like, she has kind of taken control of the public in a way. Well, she thinks she has. She wants yeah. to give us the illusion that she has control over her public. I think maybe because her public is also not as much like these young, easily impressionable people. Her public is more these really sarcastic, cynical, self-aware girlies such as ourselves.
Well, also, you know what you're getting into at this point with Caroline Calloway.
You know what you're buying. Like, you know the product.
I'm sorry,
you're
if
buying.
You pay for a pre-sale of her book, you better know that you're not gonna get that fucking book.
Yeah, you best be knowing that you are not gonna get that book.
I wanted to tie this back into another thing that's going on the internet, which is that right now there's a trend online of young women announcing that they're in their villain era, or that they're themselves.
And I have fully tweeted this so many times.
I literally, all the time, yeah. Or female manipulators, or channeling Lana Del Rey or Fleabag or any kind of media that depicts messy, complicated, and morally compromised women. And I was going to joke that Caroline is the embodiment of that trend, but the more I think about it, she genuinely is.
She genuinely is a morally complicated woman, or she
no,
genuinely
like,
is
the embodies trend. The idea of calling yourself a villain, being like, I'm a female manipulator, not being one, but this trend of announcing that this is who you are now. Because being in your villain era, despite what the name suggests, is less a declaration of defiance so much as it is defeat. While we may tell ourselves that we're rejecting the expectations being put on us by life or womanhood, in reality, we feel that those entities have rejected us. Mm. We've failed one too many times, but because we know that our culture is less accepting of female mediocrity, we bend the narrative, even romanticize it, so that it all feels intentional. There's less levity to move on from our mistakes without being branded by them, so we embrace them to save face, and that's become Caroline's entire persona.
Oh.
She presents herself as one step ahead, but is often two steps behind, as we've said.
Yeah.
Which, again, makes Caroline an amalgamation of mine and probably many other women's fears about being online.
I mean, yeah, that is interesting, the concept of, like, saying that you're in your villain era. Well, again, I like I've said, as a coping mechanism, like, you are kind of defeated. It is admitting defeat. I think when I'm in the depths of despair, which I have been many times this year, you and I have both joked about how I should just enter my villain era. I think recently you were like, you should put on dark lipstick, and everyone says, what's up with her?
And you go, I'm in my villain era.
I'm actually in my villain era. I know. And, like, I've had fantasies for sure, like, watching Fleabag. Okay, and I hate that Fleabag has been whittled into this trope because I think it's one of the great masterpieces of this decade. Yeah, you also still haven't seen it, so exposed.
I mean, but you know how many girls are like,
no, I know.
I'm in my Fleabag
era. But I don't like that is... that it's become kind of like subject to criticism because of what the public has made it into. But yes, I do agree that watching Fleabag did give me this kind of liberty to be a fucking bitch. She isn't really a bitch. She's a deeply traumatized, grieving person in the show Fleabag. But I do feel like there is a lot of freedom that comes with being able to be like, I don't want to abide by any moral or social norms. I just want to be a fucking bitch. And yeah. I have often fantasized about being just outwardly mean to people who have wronged me and not caring. But unfortunately, I do care. And it's not true that I'm in my villain era. It's just a coping mechanism, a defense thing.
Well, yeah, it's like when you give yourself a shitty haircut because you feel like shit and you're like, yeah, this is a new me. I'm changing. But really, it's just you representing how awful you feel on the inside with your bad haircut. Which I've been guilty of so many times.
I am also guilty of that.
And I think with Caroline, I mean, she is living with the freedom of not having to hide the fact that she's fucked up because she's made that her brand. While, you know, I think she likes to kind of girl bossify it and make it seem like this powerful thing she's doing. It's really just that she couldn't live under the pressure of just having failed. She had to commodify it for herself.
It's so much harder to be an apologetic person than it is to be a person who's like, I'm not going to apologize. I do suck. And I think it also makes you more immune to criticism. And I think we're going to talk about this in our Trisha Paytas episode.
Yeah.
But there's just that idea of being uncancelable. And it's when you just do so many things that are against moral social norms yeah. that people are just fatigued by you and then don't feel the need to constantly criticize you or like beat you down. And when you apologize, they want to beat you down more. So maybe all you can do is just be like, yeah, I do suck. And screw you.
I mean, yeah, when you have like no fucks to give, they can't really take anything from you.
Exactly. But it is a short-term solution. It's like a band-aid solution. And I don't think, again, what you say, like, I don't think it's good for her, because in the future, this is going to be her brand. What is this going to do for her career?
It doesn't inspire room for growth. I mean, not even a redemption arc, but like just for herself. I don't know. I mean, I think that she is always going to be an endless well of things to analyze and project our own thoughts on the culture onto.
And laugh about, to be honest. No, we're not laughing at her. We're laughing with her.
Well, I mean, that's what she'd like. She represents a lot of very flawed things, a lot of sad things. And also, yeah, is kind of one of my favorite things to look at the internet, which, am I bad for that?
I don't know. All I can say is I hope Caroline girl bosses her way to the sun.
Caroline, when that book has actually been printed, you know I'm gonna buy it and I'm gonna read it. I need it to be in print before I commit.
What all we're gonna end this with is that we are not buying pre-sale.
Rehash is hosted by Hannah Rain and me, Maia. It's produced and edited by me, and the intro and outro song is produced by our talented friend, Ian Mills. Thanks for listening.